This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2020, Episode 16. You know, Dr. Rob, it's kind of interesting because we normally record either on Sunday or Monday. We were both kind of busy this week. You are actually sitting in your car at the hospital right now in a little break from surgery. But I think I'm happy we waited till Thursday night to record because so much stuff has happened.
It has been an interesting week. We got stuff to talk about.
You know, I called it this way. You tell me if I'm wrong. The lead into this is Nebraska's biggest win of the year. And it wasn't against Purdue. Nebraska's biggest win of the year is getting the satisfaction of being right.
You know what? I thought we were right back in August when everybody was pissed off saying we shouldn't be canceling the season, delaying the season. Basically, every decision that the Big Ten made, Nebraska screamed bloody murder about. Half the nation's media told us we were a bunch of whining crybabies, and now it's December and everybody's like, you guys had it right from the get-go.
You know, I don't think
we were wrong.
I think it was Stuart Mandel who actually said, okay, Nebraska, you were right. I don't think we've heard an apology from Pat Forty. I don't think we've heard one from Paul Feinbaum. We certainly haven't.
Those guys clammed up. I mean, I saw Forty release like this two-tweet statement. And you could literally see him grinding his teeth and pursing his lips for no other reason than he just had to announce the Big Ten's decision, and it went against everything he'd been saying all along.
You know, the interesting part about that is, you know, these guys have been wrong all season. Every one of them, because remember, they were the ones who were saying there will not be college football. And they made all these proclamations. Has it been perfect? No. Has there been games missed? Yes. But for the most part, the elite writers, and I'm not that's a loose term, have been wrong this entire season. Just wrong.
They really have. I kind of struggle outside of maybe kind of a select few. You go to the individual cities, and there's a small number. You know, of the newspapers I looked at online, maybe about 50% of the Big Ten beat writers were in favor of playing the season and said the Big Ten was wrong. Now, most of the national media wasn't calling out those other writers. Everybody kind of focused in on Nebraska, Nebraska's administrators, coaches, and the local media for the push to have college football in the Big Ten this year. Yeah, it was mind-blowing to me then, and there's a little bit of satisfaction now. I got to be honest, more than anything, I'm kind of disappointed that now that it's literally 4 months later, people are looking back going, you were right. Because I'm sitting here going, you know, we could have done this so much better. I'm looking at the Big 12, the SEC, the ACC, and even the teams that have had to miss or cancel a few games have still played 8, 9, 10 games, sometimes more than that for some of these teams. And I'm looking at the Big Ten that if you've got 6 games under your belt, you've done pretty good. We could have done this just so much better, and we could have done it so much safer because if you really think it's a safety issue, was it safer to play football back in September when the caseload across the nation was literally half what it is right now? I mean, we've got more COVID cases than we've ever had, and now is when we're trying to play football games? I mean, it's just what a bunch of freaking idiots.
Well, it's interesting you say that. So let's start with Ohio State. So Natalie, and you were in agreement. I mean, they made the right decision by allowing Ohio State to play in the championship game.
It is, and it was a hypocritical decision. I'll never say it wasn't, but it was hypocritical in the sense that it went against a very stupid previous decision. It's not like you made a hypocritical wrong decision now. This is the right decision. The wrong one was made back in August, early September to cancel.
So true. and I like their reasoning here. And it's okay to admit you're wrong, right? It's perfectly okay to say, you know what, we were wrong. This thing is in fluid motion, and Ohio State belongs there, because even if they were to lose to Michigan, they still would have been in the Big Ten championship game. But this really is about – it's not about playing in a championship game. It's about getting an opportunity to play in a national championship.
And that's the bottom line right there.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the thing, I guess, that the one thing that still bugs me about the decision-making process, or at least the way they announced it, is they gave this explanation in the sense that this had to do with looking at the situation, trying to be fluid with it, looking at the games played. What was the line? Analysis of wins and losses. And I'm sitting here going, this doesn't have anything to do with an analysis of wins and losses. The only thing this has to do with is the fact that you're sitting here going, oh, we're going to look like idiots that we made this half-hearted attempt at a season, and we still have a team that's capable of finding a way into the national title playoff, and we're gonna botch it, and it's gonna cost recognition, pride, money, recruiting. They made this decision for all the material reasons. This wasn't a intelligence, fluidity of the situation. We came to our senses. Well, it was, I guess, kind of a came to our senses. It wasn't that they came around to a more intelligent way of thinking. It's they sat back and they took a good hard look at the concrete reality of the material aspects of this in terms of national recognition and dollars and cents, and made the decision based on that. And you know what? I'm fine with that. Just don't give me this bullshit that you guys finally are making an intelligent, informed decision now that you have new information. You had the information back in September. You just misused it all along.
Well, and that brings up the bigger question. If Ohio State really wasn't in contention for a college football playoff, would they have ruled the same way? Let's say this was Nebraska, you know, going up against, or even Iowa, Northwestern, right? Let's say one of those one or two loss teams. Well, would they have been the rules for them if there was no national title on the line?
No. The only reason this happened is because of the national title picture, and that's it. And you know, some people have said, well, if the shoe was on the other foot and it was Nebraska, you know what? If this was a 6-0 Nebraska team that was ranked 3rd through 5th in the country and had a shot at going to the playoff, you bet your ass they'd make this decision and try to get Nebraska into the playoff. They may not like it, but again, it goes back to the fact that this was a very materialistic decision-making process. And if it means being able to take a team that you can lay claim to as a Big Ten team, and they went to the National College Football Playoff, it doesn't matter if it's Nebraska, Iowa, Northwestern, Indiana, Maryland, Rutgers. As long as it's a Big Ten team with a shot at the playoff, they'll do what they need to do to get them into the playoff. That's the bottom line. It's that level of recognition, and it's those dollars and cents that are pulling the strings here. So I actually do think if the shoe is on the other foot and it was a highly ranked Nebraska team, yeah, they would have done it too. It wasn't just that it was Ohio State. It's the fact that it was a playoff contender. That was where the decision was made.
Yeah, but it's the right decision. I'm all for it because you have to look after your own. At the end of the day, you have to look out for your own because you are in competition with the SEC. You're in competition with the ACC. And if you're going to get left out of that national spotlight, leadership probably would have lost a lot of favors amongst its own members if you don't stick up for your own.
I agree. I think you're absolutely right on that front. And, I mean, there's still a strong degree of one for all and all for one, as long as you still have your eyes on that big bottom line. I mean, it's not like they were going to say, nope, all for one, Indiana gets to go to the the conference title game. It's one of those, well, is Indiana going to get an invite to the college football playoff? Even if they win, probably not. Is Ohio State going to get that invite if they win the Big Ten title game? Absolutely. So you send your best chance.
Exactly. You know, Indiana and Purdue were canceled this week, so they're not playing for the old Oaken Bucket. My question to you is this, and I'm going to bring up three teams because I follow them the closest. I'm going to talk about Nebraska. I'm going to talk about Iowa State. I'm going to talk about Iowa. None of those teams have really been affected by COVID this year. And it's not like there haven't been, you know, Iowa is one of the hottest spots in the country. Nebraska cases are rolling. Not saying there hasn't been positives on the team, but why have they been able to control it better than some other teams?
You know what? I think there's a lot of it goes back to the motivation to play. And that's something that I think you saw at various levels, high school football, college football, the NFL, the organizations and the teams that were highly motivated to do this, I think built in an infrastructure, put into place a series of systems, medical oversight to try and get this done. And I think even with somebody like Nebraska, who were the season obviously isn't what anybody wanted. It'd be great to be sitting here, say 4-2 right now, going, hey, you know what? The season sucked because we got a couple of losses and we're only going to play 6 or 7 games. But you know what? We're 4-2 and we beat Iowa and there you go. Well, that didn't happen, obviously. It wasn't the season we wanted. But there was that motivation to play, and they put those systems into place. I mean, you go back to last spring. I remember, I think it was in April and May, where you had guys like Zach Duvall and Dave Ellis literally quarantining with the team in dorms for those really late spring, early summer sessions as they started working out to get ready for the season. Literally operating in kind of as much of a bubble that a university could create for a sports team. And they did a great job with it. You look across the country at the teams that were motivated to do that, and you did see outbreaks in the ACC, the SEC, in the Big 12. But for the most part, you saw a lot of these teams did a very good job, were highly, highly motivated to play. And those were the teams that did a really great job and were very, very dedicated and disciplined, really, to maintain that safety level amongst the players and staff. I mean, you look at the teams, truth be told, go look at the teams that voted against this, and those are the teams that have probably struggled the most with COVID numbers. And I'm not saying they weren't trying to be safe, but I don't know if they had that just kind of finite minutia level of kind of making sure they had absolutely all bases covered. And a team like Nebraska did. Now, the other thing that I think helped is you kind of had Nebraska Medicine here, UNMC, the Nebraska Medical Center, as kind of the point people, one, on a national level, definitely within the Big Ten Conference and absolutely within the state of Nebraska as a monstrously powerful and beneficial resource for the university and the state in terms of helping out with all of this stuff. I mean, again, you look at multiple levels where the Med Center helped out high school athletes, high school teams, small college teams, the University of Nebraska down in Lincoln. There was a lot of resources provided by Nebraska Medicine to make sure that these sports teams and these seasons were able to play out in the manner in which they did. I'm an alumni from there. I'm incredibly proud of the people who are there and the amount of work that they did within the sports world to get to where we are now in the state of Nebraska. They did a phenomenal job, and it's a phenomenal resource that absolutely played in to the results that you've seen with COVID on UNL's football team.
Yeah, and I would say the same about Iowa State, which has gone through the season pretty much unscathed, and same with Iowa. It's just that attention to detail. It's that want and understanding. I think it comes down to leadership. Say what you want about Scott, because Scott's taken his beatings this year. But I do think, you know, Kirk Ferentz, Matt Campbell, Scott Frost have laid out this just expectation of leadership and what they expect. And I think their guys have followed it.
They have. And, I mean, as bad as a season as they've had. Again, it wasn't a great season, and there's been plenty of stuff to criticize. And I mean, I've been a pretty big critic of a number of things in terms of how they've done stuff. But that's on the field, that's coaching decisions, that's schemes, play calling, etc. But when you look at the dedication these guys had to just get the season played, those three teams did an outstanding job of it. And again, I'd have to think you look at Iowa State University, University of Iowa, you've got campuses with really, really dedicated, you've got an amazing medical center, Carver College there in Iowa City. You look at Iowa State, which, I mean, from a science standpoint,
well, they're a veterinary school, but the same thing.
It is a vet school, but it is an amazing university from a science standpoint. They churn out a ton of pre-med students every year, and it's a great university from a science standpoint. And those are the places where you saw those resources that could be put to use. And I have a hard time believing Iowa and Iowa State didn't rely on those resources the same that UNL did to try and get this done.
Yeah, you keep saying it's a bad season, and listen to me, I'm going to be the positive one here. You know, they come off a 10-point win at Purdue, which they played a lot better than they did the week before against Iowa.
They did. Purdue pulled in Nebraska and did everything they could to help them out.
Now, they play Minnesota this weekend. Minnesota's no good. And then they're going to get that game next week against somebody from the East. Nebraska could really end this season on a 3-game winning streak, and if they go to a bowl game, maybe a 4-game winning streak. This could end up being a better season than most people thought going back after the Illinois game.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at a team like Minnesota, you kind of got to be careful when you say
they're no good, dude.
They're no good.
They're not.
We said Illinois was no good.
Yeah,
Nebraska was a 14. What?
I know.
I can't remember by game time, but at one point they were, I think, a 14.5 favorite. You got to be really careful, again, in a season like this. And we've talked about how disjointed things are because you didn't have that normal run-up to the season. You didn't have that normal prep, that normal routine. And so you're going to have games like that Illinois game, and Nebraska's got to be careful. You've got a wounded dog coming into Lincoln in Minnesota with, I think they said, potentially might only have 60-some scholarship guys that make the trip. And is it, I think, Rashad Bateman's opted out, if I'm not mistaken. It's a setup for a win for Nebraska. But at the same time, man, that's a Nebraska team that, as much as I want to see that nice ending to the season, you got to be careful because this is not a team that has shown a high level of discipline, not only this year, but over the past 2 or 3 years. And those are teams that can let their guard down. Those are teams that can get a little bit overconfident when you're looking at an opponent. And that's something Frost needs to get this team to learn how to focus on themselves and not look at the opponent. Osborne was a genius at getting you to not care whether you were playing Middle Tennessee State or Oklahoma. We went out there the same way week in and week out. We didn't care who it was we were playing. We were going to put that same product on the field. I'm not sure these guys have that discipline and that focus to maintain that consistency. And so they've got to be careful and not overlook Minnesota.
I know, but man, I get it. I do. But Minnesota has just seemed to struggle. I watched them play Iowa. I watched them play a couple other games. they're just not any good, man.
Well, and I think there's a motivation thing as well there too. I think there was a very strong desire by the university administration to not want to play this year. And I think that absolutely filters down. Now, you compare that to Iowa, you compare that to the Big 12 schools, you compare that to Nebraska, where you look at a guy like Carter, you look at a guy like Moose. I mean, these are administrators and university leaders that you look at Green, you look at the people in charge down in Lincoln. They had that motivation. Those guys were not afraid to go out on a limb and draw a lot of ire nationally from media, from their university peers across the Big Ten, and kind of put themselves out there on a limb and say, hey, we think the Big Ten's wrong. We think we ought to be playing sports this fall. We think we need to get our brand out there, and we don't care if we're going to get ridiculed for saying it. And I don't know how to put it into words better than I already have, because I think that the leadership at Nebraska did a great job with that. And I see the same thing at the other Big 12 schools like Ohio State, schools like Iowa, that wanted to play. And that filters down to the players. It has an effect on the coaches and on the players themselves. You look at Purdue. I think they were done. I think that was part of the – I mean, they kind of had a little burst there late third quarter, early fourth quarter to try and pull that game out. But I think Purdue went into that game really not caring if they were going to win or lose that day. I'm hoping you're right when you say that about Minnesota, because I don't think Minnesota as an institution wanted to play football this fall. And I think you have seen that from the players. I hope they bring that same lack of desire to play on Saturday.
Minnesota, of course, has played 5 games. Last time they played was on November 20th. They beat Purdue 34-31. And they've been up and down, right? They win at Illinois 41-14. Iowa kicks the crap out of them by 35-7. I got the echo there. Did you hear that?
Sorry about that. No, that was probably my phone, I think. That's what I get for recording in my car.
Well, you know, we had to get something done today, and you're dedicated to your job and saving lives, and you're also dedicated to the podcast, so that's nice.
It's a COVID podcast season. We're making do as we can.
Yeah, here. But see, I'm starting to get mad because I haven't had beer with you for a long time. I haven't been drinking any of the sours. Yeah.
Dude, I'm thinking about those beers that are just like delicately aging in your basement refrigerator.
So how about this? I know we just totally broke off, but so everybody knows that I do a morning show in Des Moines. Well, we had Bruno in. He owns the El Bait Shop. El Bait Shop's one of the most popular craft beer bars in the country. It has like 210 beers on draft. Well, he brought in a guy from Exile Brewing, which is in Des Moines today. They took their popular beer, which is called Ruthie, used the mash, and then took it to a distillery and made whiskey out of it.
And, dear God.
Oh, and so he brought it in. They had they had 12 cases left. All right? We sold all 12 cases in 2.5 hours this morning. They opened at 11. Every drop of whiskey was gone by 1:30. At $60 a bottle.
That is what COVID has done to our nation.
There's a couple things. And, you know, let's talk.
But actually, you say that. That sounds freaking delicious. I'm not a whiskey guy.
Oh, I am.
I bet it was delicious.
Yeah, I got good reviews. It's the only thing about doing a remote radio show is when they bring this whiskey in, I'm like, I don't get any. But let's talk about let's talk about COVID, because we've been talking about it. But Nebraska's lost a good number of players. A lot of those Florida kids going back home. Listen, my son was at the University of Kansas, and it was the worst semester of his life. Rob, he's left school. He's like, I can't do it. I think what we're happening, not just at Nebraska, but a lot of other schools, where even though you have the support group of, you know, your athletic family. But when you're still outside of that, kind of locked up and can't do anything, that plays mental games with you, man. That'll fuck with your head big time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we've seen rising rates of anxiety, depression, suicide rates are probably higher than they ever have been in our country. I mean, outside of maybe, you know, you look at maybe say like the Great Depression, perhaps at least from an incidence rate, it's off the charts. I mean, there's an absolute mental health epidemic that's coming out of the COVID epidemic, and you do see it filtering down. And I know you were kind of mentioning it with some of these recruits. It's tough to deal with. I mean, when you're in college, one of the few things, if you're a recruit, you come to Nebraska, you know, we've always said it's not an easy place to recruit to. It's a very much a medium-sized Midwestern city. There's not tons to do to begin with. And so if you're coming from Florida, if you're away from family, if you're coming from Texas, California, the East Coast, man, it's a difficult place to have to come to. And then at the same time, now is not only if you come to this location that's not exactly a recruiting hotbed, now you're locked up all the time. You hit the nail on the head. It's a tough thing to have to deal with. You use your son as an example, and it's a great example. He's from this area. He's from I know Lawrence is a lot smaller than Omaha. I mean, I grew up in Lincoln, and Lawrence is smaller than Lincoln, but it's a Midwestern college town, and I know what that's like. He's coming from Nebraska, going to Lawrence, Kansas, and saying, forget it, I'm going home. It's just because it's not the college experience that people go to have.
No,
and
he didn't do himself a favor. Well, we didn't do him a favor. You know, he got himself an apartment. He was living by himself. Well, that sounds great, but all of a sudden you realize you're in a prison cell, right? I mean, everything's closed. You can't go to the bars. They don't want you hanging around your friends. You can't go to – nothing's going on campus, and you find yourself doing online classes, which let's be honest, those suck. And then you're just in your house by yourself day in and day out. You go crazy.
It is. And, I mean, I look, we've kind of talked about our kids on the program, on the podcast before. I mean, our daughter's home. She did the online classes. She's home. They had a way to kind of work an extended holiday break, basically Thanksgiving until the start of the second semester, which is second week in January, I think. So she's got kind of a solid almost two months at home. But she was awfully lucky. She's on a sports team down at Florida State. She's on the rowing team there. She's in a sorority. So she had a little bit of a better buffer system in that. But at the same time, even she'd tell you, within the sorority, you can be around your own roommates. So she's got three roommates. They're kind of considered a quarantine unit. But outside of that, they're not supposed to really have extensive interactions with the other members of the house, but at least they're there. And so that actually helps a fair amount. The sports team helps a lot because they do get out there. They're practicing, they're working out together. And they're all geared up, like you see a lot of the sports teams where they're going through these extensive workouts with masks on, face coverings, et cetera. But it's better than if you didn't have that kind of support system. And she even says it kind of sucks because it's not what it's supposed to be. And I look at her with the amount of support system she has, and she says it sucks having to deal with COVID. Although at least where she's at in Florida State, it's really nice.
You know, my daughter's in New Orleans, but she was honest. She said, you know what? She goes, if I didn't have a really cool roommate, I probably wouldn't go back because you've been to New Orleans. Can you imagine New Orleans shut down?
Oh, my gosh. It'd be mind-numbing knowing everything that's there and you can't go do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, so I look at some of these recruits, some of these guys that are transferring, and I get it.
Yeah, I don't blame them. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people are that – the thing is, though, I think you're seeing this elsewhere. I know a few people kind of ran some numbers, and within the conference, within the Midwest, I think Nebraska had some of the higher numbers of people entering the transfer portal. But you're seeing it everywhere. Yeah. And, I mean, you're seeing it on the kids currently on the teams. You're seeing it with the high school, how it affects high school recruiting, too. I mean, there's a lot of guys in this 21 class that are just sitting around waiting to find out what a whole bunch of seniors are going to do before they're going to find out if schools are going to pull the trigger and offer them. You're seeing recruits. I think Arizona State actually – withdrew scholarship offers from a couple of 3- and 4-star recruits a couple of months ago because they're not sure what's going to happen with their numbers going into next season. The NC2A, to my understanding, hasn't given a scholarship limit adjustment yet. And so people just don't know how to deal with it. I think it'd be a little bit better for some of these universities, at least as it goes for the recruits currently in high school, if the NC2A would put some numbers out there for people to work with, but we haven't even gotten that yet. So it's going to be an interesting year, both for the recruits currently on campus, seeing if, because I fully anticipate there's going to be a few more guys at Nebraska as well as elsewhere that enter into that transfer portal. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Like I said, there's going to be more.
You know, and there will be some who just say, "What? I'm done." You know, Keith Duncan, the kicker at Iowa, who was, hell, he was an All-American last year. Not having quite the same year this year, but he said, "You know what? This is it for me. I'm done. I'm not coming back." But he could have an NFL career waiting for him, but he's looking at that extra year going, "Yeah, I think I'm going to pass. I'm going to go get a paycheck." And you're probably going to have a lot of guys who, you know what, either have the NFL option that are going to go or go, "You know what, I really haven't played that much over the last 4 or 5 years. It's time to go get a job." So I'm sure there's a lot of people hoping for that to happen too, to open up some numbers.
Oh, I agree. And I mean, there's, you know, I think you look at Nebraska, I think the guys to look at that are going to be sticking around, kind of the model are guys like, I mean, there's guys like Ben Stille. I think he's a guy who almost a 3-year starter on D line for Nebraska. He's gotten better every year. And I think he's a guy who would have a solid shot at finding his way into the NFL if he tried to go pro after this season. But I think he's one of those guys who's right on the cusp of having a really, really awesome year if he comes back next year. Look, I mean, he'd be the type of guy who would be like a 5th to 7th round draft pick and would probably make an NFL team, to being a 2nd or 3rd round draft pick and making millions more if he sticks around for the following year. That's the model of guy that I think you're going to see that's going to come back. It's going to be those guys who are either full-time starters, but right on the cusp of a breakout year if they come back, or maybe part-time starters that if they come back, they would be a really, really valuable, maybe almost like all conference caliber guy if they came back for that additional year. The guys I look at that are good, solid backups, getting playing time, but not that full-time starter, those are the guys that I think you're going to see those guys move on. The other guys, like you said, that are going to move on, it's going to be those it's going to be those guys that have that definite NFL job waiting for them that I think you're going to see those guys go ahead. They're going to go ahead and go get that paycheck now. But I mean, look at a guy, like I said, for Nebraska fans, look at a guy like Ben Stille. That's the guy who I think is going to be the caliber of guy who's going to come back for that extra year.
Anybody you don't want to come back?
You want me to say it, don't you?
Yeah, I'm that big of a dick, so yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I put his name out there. I mean, there's guys that I think they've given it all to the program. They've played well. Well, let me rephrase that. They have played as well as they can, and I don't see them getting better with an additional year. And that's a guy like Farniok. I don't think he comes back and you see a better player out of him next year. Now, I could see him going to the NFL, getting in with a different group of coaches, getting a different level of coaching, a different type of coach, maybe even just a coach with a different personality who teaches a different skill set, and having a step up and improvement. You've seen that from guys. I mean, you've seen that from Alex Lewis. You've seen that from Nick Gates. I mean, geez, Nick Gates has been starting a slew of games from my New York Giants this year, for God's sakes. At center of all positions, he broke my own rule, and you took a guy who's not a center and turned him into a center. But it's I don't see a guy like him staying at Nebraska and getting better. And I think there's younger guys with a higher ceiling who I would like to see on the field more going into next year. There, I've said it. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my opinion.
Well, this is just a total opinion based podcast anyway, so it doesn't really matter. That's why people listen to the show, is for your opinion, sir.
Well, there you have it. So yeah, I don't think Matt gains anything by sticking around, and I don't think Nebraska gains anything by having him stick around. We've got other guys that I think could be better ball players and will do better for Nebraska in his stead.
Speaking of players, your nephew Isaac was offered a preferred walk-on at Missouri. Any other things coming out with him? Did I read that Nebraska's finally starting to talk to him a little bit?
Yeah, you know, truth be told, Frost has been a great communicator. I mean, my brother played with Scott's right guard the whole time. Frost, they were in Lincoln together. They were in the same class. They've got a great relationship. And you know what? They talk. And, you know, right now, I think the big thing, again, a lot of these schools right now, if you're to ask me right now, John hasn't told me specifically this. This is my gestalt reading between the lines. Right now, Nebraska doesn't have the numbers to make the offer. And some of it will depend on what happens with some of these seniors and if they go. And that's affecting tons of these 21 guys. Like I said, there's three, four-star guys that are sitting out there without good offers. Now, I shouldn't say good offers. There's three, four-star guys without offers that they would prefer to have. Isaac would prefer to have a full ride offer at K-State, at Nebraska, at Missouri, at Wyoming. And he doesn't have that. He's got some 1AA offers. He's got actually pretty nice Ivy League offers. That's not a bad place to go to school. Cornell would be solid. Dartmouth would be solid. He's got offers from them. It's not your classic athletic grant and aid that it is at Nebraska or Wyoming. It's they work a system that you go in and you come out and your school's been paid for magically. It's the Ivy League. That's how they do it. But it's an athletic offer to go to an Ivy. He's got a 2 or 3 Ivy League offers. So
what I hear you saying is he's got the Zadiska brain.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to figure out what happened there, because obviously John's not that smart. So somehow skipped the lineage on the tree. It went laterally instead of vertically. So. But he, you know what? Oh, incredibly smart. He and his sister are smarter in hell. They're going to do great at the next level athletically and academically. But Isaac's got options. It's not like he's sitting here with nothing in hand. And so that's what creates the conundrum here, is that you talk to Isaac, he's 100% convinced he can play at the 1A level. He's 100% convinced he can be a Power 5 guy. But he's got preferred walk-on offers at Power 5 schools. He's got D1 scholarship offers at 1AA and Ivy League schools. And so do you take that Power 5 preferred walk-on spot, knowing in your heart that you can earn a scholarship at some point, whether it's a semester in or 2 years in, or do you take that full ride to Montana State or Cornell or Dartmouth? And that's the struggle that he's got right now, all while he's also sitting around waiting to see what happens with the current college seniors. Yeah. So it's kind of a tough spot to be in. At the same time, I mean, he's blessed in the sense that he's got full ride offers to go to school at some that's something you can't take away from him either. It's something that he's incredibly proud of, and that I know his parents are incredibly proud of as well, too. And I know he's incredibly thankful for that.
So did your car take over your phone because you got all tinty all of a sudden?
Sorry about this. Should I repeat that? Or
no, I think I think most people got the gist of it. But
he's got offers. He's incredibly thankful for that, and he's in a good spot. It's like I said, it's a tough spot because he's got good options. He just got to weigh out which of those great options he's going to do. And some of these very good options are maybe not what he wants to do, but it doesn't mean they're not great options for him. So, but we'll see what happens here over the next few months when some of these schools do figure out what they're going to do with their seniors here, if those guys are going to come back or not.
It's a good time to wrap up because your phone's getting all tinty, and you got to get back to surgery. But you know, the holidays are here.
I need to see if they need me still.
Well, and of course,
I've got a great group. I got a great group of partners willing to help me out with stuff like that.
It's so cool. You're ready to go into surgery, and you're like, hey, can somebody cover for me? I got to do a podcast. Everybody's like, yeah. You know why? Because they probably wanted to hear it too. I've gotten so many like emails, people like, dude, I got LinkedIn messages this week like, hey, when's the podcast coming out? Like CFOs and COOs of companies. And I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't know this many people listen to this show. It cracks me up.
We know stuff, Travis, and we're willing to talk about it.
That's exactly right. Of course, the holidays are here. Take care of the people who support this podcast each and every day and all year long. That would be Husker Hounds. That'd be Ticket Express. It'd be Infusion Brewing Company. That'd be Husker Max. And, of course, our good friend Dave Remington. Listen, who knows what's going to happen with the Remington Trophy situation this year. They have not determined the details as of yet. But it's been a tough year for nonprofits. As you come up at the end of the year, I highly encourage you to making one of your tax-deductible donations to the Remington Trophy and the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Again, it's been a tough year for a lot of nonprofits. Dave's in the same boat. Highly encourage you to donate money to the Boomer Esiason Foundation.
Literally a life-saving foundation.
Absolutely it is. And you can save lives as well, especially those who are fighting for their business lives. Scott Strunk over at Husker Hounds. Man, he's open for the holidays, guys. He's got three locations in the Omaha area. Go check him out. He's got great stores. He's got great stuff. If you want some Big Red under your tree this year, Scott's the way to go. And
go wear Big Red with pride. They weren't afraid to flip off the Big Ten this year.
No, they weren't. And then, Chad over at Ticket Express, at least Scott's been able to have his doors open and sell stuff, you know, with no concerts, no games, no nothing. Chad's just been sitting there going, can we get this thing over with? And
go buy your 21 season tickets. He's got them.
Absolutely. And you know what? Beer has always been selling, so make sure to get to Infusion Brewing Company for some beer. Dr. Rob, I miss having beer with you. This COVID thing sucks. I can't wait till you can sit in my basement again, and we can drink beer, and we can laugh and smile, and you don't leave for like 3 hours. Because if people only knew the conversations that took place, you know, we end up talking for an hour here. We end up talking for another 2 hours after this thing's done. So it's I miss having you over here, bud.
Well, that's usually been our Monday night routine: is record a podcast, get drunk, and then I sober up watching the Monday night game.
Exactly,
with you.
Exactly. So go back to surgery. Thanks so much. Make sure to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. That's at Doc Talk Sports. If you have a question for us, you can always send us an email, doctalksports@gmail.com. And before you hang up, just make sure you take time to like this podcast and also give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify or Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to us. Give us a like, give us a review, because the more you do that, well, the more people have a chance to find us. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.